I'm Gab. He's Jules. No clue about the weather. May well be cold in West London.
We don't care.
But it's red hot here in Doha because we have our two final together. Other fun in Argentina, and the other team is... Got a lot of use out of that shirt there, Jules. France against Argentina, Lionel Messi against Kylian Mbappe.
Yes,
much,
baby.
Much more than that. Obviously, that's the obvious subtext, a big W for Qatar in that one, right? Messi,
yeah.
Mbappe, Paris Saint-Germain.
Of course.
How about that?
That's the dream final.
But we're going to start by talking about that France v. Morocco semifinal because... Morocco, I think, have been the story of the tournament, yeah. Along with Messi. They don't allow me to be an editor, right, to make these big editorial decisions or to be a producer. But if I were, I would say these are my two big stories of this tournament. Morocco, football-wise, Morocco and Lionel Messi's, you know, attempt
farewell,
to win a World Cup.
Yeah, and
right?
Farewell too.
So we have to talk about Morocco. I thought that game, Jules, was clearly marked by two things. One is the injuries, because he put Aguerre in the starting lineup when they handed out the team sheets. Supposedly, he tried to warm up. I think he knew that Aguerre couldn't play. It was going to be some sort of Willis Reed, New York Knicks, 1970 Game 7 NBA Finals moment. By the way, that was before I was born.
I know.
But I know my history.
You know your history. The only title that they've ever won, by the way.
But, so he bows out. Romain Saïss and Mazraoui starting. But again, those two guys... clearly not fit. After 20 minutes, Saïss went out. So that's one thing which impacted the game. The other thing, inevitably, Theo Hernandez's goal after just, what, 2-3 minutes?
Yeah, 5 or 5 minutes maybe it was. The injuries, to start with, we knew that they were weakened already. We knew that they'd given a lot against Spain, a lot against Portugal, that maybe this was going to be a step too high. I don't know if this is the right thing to try. Or if it would have been better to start with 11 like fit players, even if they're not at the level of a Saïss or of a Aguerd or of a Mazraoui, we will never know what would have happened if Regragui had started, you know, no Saïss and no Mazraoui, for example, and fit players instead. I can see why he tried it. I can understand the logic behind it. I know you want to play a semi-final of the World Cup if you're a player, even if you're just 50% or 60%. I don't know. I think that France would have won anyway. Even if they didn't play well, and Morocco deserve credit for the way they played and kept going and never giving up and trying to create something and to cause problems. But overall, I think that the step was just too high this time.
It was a high step. Obviously, chasing a game from early on.
It doesn't help, yeah.
It becomes more difficult, even more so for Morocco, who, you know, I've said this before. They're not a defend and counter, purely defend and counter team. Like, they don't play a low block. They play a mid block. When they counter... They counter through passing and combination. Again, might be different if Mbappe were Moroccan, you just lump the ball over the top and let him chase it, right? But there's so much quality, so much organization, so much intelligence in the way they played. And so they find themselves early on having to take the game to France. And there were moments which could have broken their way.
Yemik, yeah,
hitting it was overhead kick.
Yeah,
hitting. I can't tell if it hit the base of the post or if it hit Lloris.
Yeah, Lloris's hand just in front of it.
But pretty darn close.
Yeah.
And then obviously the Sofiane Boufal incident, which could easily have been given a penalty. Probably should have been given as a penalty.
I don't think it was a pen. No, I think Theo touching the ball, he takes the ball out of the, and then it's just two players barging into each other. I don't think that was a pen.
All right, but could have been.
Could have. Yeah. Could yeah. Have maybe. Been.
So. We're talking fine margins,
yeah.
And obviously France's second goal came late. But let me ask you this. Did it play into Deschamps? Didier Deschamps would have been so happy saying, like, oh, look, we got the early lead. Now I can go back to being 2018 Didier
exactly.
Deschamps.
Exactly. 39% of the ball against Morocco is exactly what he dreamed of the night before. We spoke to Regragui after the game, and we said to him, oh, was it the game plan to have 61% of the ball? And he said, well, no, at all. That was not what we wanted to do, but we kind of had to because we fell behind early on, and also because the French were too happy to sit back and wait. And I think this French team is so good at suffering, really, which is crazy to say, but they're good at it. They can deal well with it. They deal well. They don't panic. They deal well with everything that comes their way. If you think the second half, really, when they were... they look under, a bit more under pressure. There was only 3 shots on target. The XG from Morocco in the second half is very, very low, very little. I know there's a couple of good crosses, but nothing that would threaten the French defense.
Okay, so use a term there. Is that a French term, like knowing how to suffer, being able to suffer? Because that is a very Italian term. I grew up hearing this about how, like, you know, we would have Italy teams in the past that would effectively simply just defend the old Catenaccio, I mean, years ago, and then try to nick a goal here or there, and they're always running around and suffering and defending well and whatever. And so we know how to suffer. And I don't like that term. I don't like that term because this is a low-scoring sport. If you're suffering, it's because you're not playing well. Because there is a way to defend well, to not concede anything, to defend your league without suffering, right?
Yeah, completely.
Without that kind of frenzy. And I thought, I saw a little bit of that with France. You know, I saw France in difficulty. When Griezmann, starting out almost in like almost playing as a number 10 in 4-2-3-1, and then by the end, he was a third midfielder, right?
Yeah, which was always a bit the plan, to be fair, because that's where he's played all tournament. But yeah, no, I see what you mean. I think it's a very thin balance to find between suffering in the sense that you can still control the game and the pace of the game, and even if you let the ball to the opposition, you suffer because you don't have it, but you're not under that much pressure. Or more like against England, for example, that second half against England where they suffered, but they struggled.
Yeah.
I never really thought against Morocco that they struggled as well when they suffered. But yeah, you're right. It's a dangerous, it's just, I find it a dangerous game to play. I was not happy yesterday after the game. I thought they should have played much better. They could have played much better. And I don't understand this obsession almost with like, we've got the lead. Okay, let's do the minimum. And then let's defend now. And we know we're going to have another chance. And to be fair, Giroud hit the post. And it could have been 2-0 up after 25 minutes or 20 minutes. Then there's another Giroud chance in the first half. And then even in the second half, there's a few. So, of course, it could have been very different. However, they played with my heart too much.
I think some of the reason, well, I could tell, Jules, because you were sitting next to me in the first half in the media tribute.
I kept grabbing your arm. Every time I was just like, oh.
And then at halftime, you disappeared. You went somewhere else in the stadium. I didn't see you. I had no idea where you were. So I did wonder, is he okay? Obviously, you're okay.
Just
you're
about.
Now.
Just about.
I some of the rest of the France team, because I thought Ousmane Dembélé in this game gave you nothing.
But it's because you defend. So he has to defend more than attack. And why I don't understand.
Well, sweetie, you're a winger. In the modern game, you have to defend against an attacking fullback. It's part of the game, Ousmane. Sorry, dude.
No, but what I mean is that he recovers the ball, let's say, in his 30.
Right. So then pass it to somebody, run up the pitch, receive it back, do something.
Yeah, but it would be so much more effective if he was recovering the ball higher up the pitch, which they don't do, which I don't understand why.
I'll draw a parallel between him. I thought Marcus Thuram played exceptionally well when he came
on. Yeah, yeah, big difference.
You know, I like to criticize Didier Deschamps as much as anybody. I thought the Giroud for Thuram with Mbappe effectively becoming center forward after that, I thought that was 100% nailed on move.
I agree.
And by the way, if you're not having a great a great game in terms of opportunities going forward, Ousmane, why don't you copy from the young gun on the other side of the pitch? Because Marcus Thuram gave you so much forward and defensively.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. You're right. And he's at the high line. He's involved in the second goal, he's involved in one of the chances that Kylian has as well. And this is what Deschamps wants. Coman could not really play because he had a bit of a virus himself, like Upamecano and Rabiot, who were also missing. And I think we saw how much Rabiot was missed and how important he is for that team and how good it would be for him to come back for the final.
Not the same thing.
Not the same. No bad game from Fofana, but just not the same thing. You're right. But yeah, I like Coman and I like Colomani. 40 seconds in, first touch, beam, scores a goal in the semi-final of the World Cup. It's like a dream come true.
So we talked about Morocco, obviously, after the semi-final win. I want to re-emphasize this point because a lot of people may have missed it, right? Obviously, we all know first Arab team, first African team, second team from a majority Muslim nation to reach the stage. Do you know there have been 88 World Cup semifinalists / final fourists in 1950? Obviously, it was a 14 World Cup.
Yeah.
How many of those 88? We're going to play a little test, a little trivia with Jules. How many of those 88 are not from Europe and South America?
Wow. Okay. So
I'll give you a hint. One is Morocco.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. I will go for
all right.
Five, six, maybe. I forget one, maybe.
three.
Three that are not Europeans?
Mm-hmm. European or South American? Obviously.
Oh, I didn't hear the South American. That's why, because I was counting already Uruguay, Argentina, and Brazil.
So there's been 88 teams. Obviously, yeah. Some teams might have done it more times.
Yeah.
Right? 88 teams reach the semifinals.
Okay.
Three have not come. There's been three occasions when they've not been from Europe or South America.
Okay.
One is Morocco. Yeah. One is obviously
South Korea.
2002. The other one?
Yeah. And then I wonder the other one, I think. I knew there was another one, but I won't.
I'll give you a hint. It's a very big country. You've been there.
I've been there.
Your basketball heroes are from there.
My basketball.
Most of them. Except for that guy, the 7'5" French guy who dribbled with his legs. But many of the other ones are from there.
Okay, from the U.S.
The United States of America, 1930 World Cup. Check it out. Brett Patnaud, first person in history to score a hat trick in a World Cup.
Amazing.
Again, just to point it out, that was before my time as well.
Yeah, you were not born in 1930.
No, I was not born in 1930. No, but just to put it in context.
Yeah, of course. It's an amazing achievement.
This is a really big deal. And the point I made in my column in writing about this is not built on sand. This is not, oh, look, we found a bunch of talented people in Europe who are of Moroccan origin and we chucked them together. As you explained on the show but last time, as we talked about, there's the King Mohammed Center in Morocco.
Yeah.
They supply the current African Champions League champion, the African Confederation Cup champion, which is like their Europa League. There is a lot of work behind it.
There is, and great success as well.
And I think this is a bit of an inflection point. You know, not necessarily for Morocco, not necessarily for African football. But I would, to sound like Pele making predictions here, but I don't know if somebody's going to win the World Cup in the next 20 years from outside Europe or South America, but I think you will certainly see people closing in, whether it's obviously CONCACAF, Mexico, yeah. The U.S., Canada. There's a whole bunch, you know, I mean, Nigeria, Cameroon, and obviously from Asia, Korea, Japan. Like there are... I think the gap is definitely
Yeah, no, I can see what you mean. Yeah, I can see that coming.
So big shout out to Morocco.
Yeah, for history and for everything they made, and it has to be the beginning though. This can't be in itself an achievement. And you think, okay, we've got there, and now it's fine. There's an AFCON to come in 2024, which I think they can win. Regragui is going to stick around for now, but very soon he's going to go to a club and a bigger club with big things to achieve. But you need to make the most of having this generation there. The younger one, like Unai, for example, is there for 10 years. But the likes of Ziyech, even Boufal, you know, enjoy them and make the most of them being there right now.
All right, final word on Regragui, because I have no idea why, but I read in Italian paper, Gazzetta dello Sport, that Rudy Garcia is taking credit for having launched
but
him.
But I told you.
Him.
I told you this story, no?
I'm not on the podcast, you haven't.
So then you didn't read my article on Regragui then for the website?
Funnily enough, I may not have.
You may not have. Rudy Garcia, indeed, launched his career in the 5th Division at Corbeil in the like south suburbs of Paris. And with Rudy Garcia, that was his first coaching job.
This is the same Rudy Garcia, by the way, who, of course, won Ligue 1 with Eden Hazard. In his team, Green Hazard, Rio Mavuba, Moussa Sal.
Exactly,
incredible
team. Then went to Roma, went to Lille, to Marseille, right. To Lyon, all of that. So Regragui started as a 19-year-old in the 5th Division. They went up to 4th, 3rd, and then Regragui had a decent career as a pro. And guess who was commentating yesterday?
Was it the very same Rudy Garcia?
Exactly. You see how destiny sometimes, 25 years later.
I just want to make this clear about Rudy. I really like Rudy Garcia, but you discovered him as a footballer, not as a coach. Because I understand it, as a coach, despite being French and coming through, he didn't get many opportunities in France, which is why he ended up here, and obviously he coached Al Wydad as well, right?
True, but I think Garcia has been a mentor for him. Right. I think he went to like kind of like an internship, if you want, the clubs that Garcia went to study the game and everything. He's a keen learner, Regragui. Okay. He's a very smart guy, but keen learner.
So Regragui's Mikel Arteta and Rudy Garcia's Pep Guardiola.
Yeah, a bit like
Never thought I would ever say that.
I mean, there was even a conference given on Zoom by Mikel Arteta a few months ago to African coaches, and Regragui was on the Zoom call. Like, it was about the Arsenal-Manchester City game in the FA Cup. And Arteta was explaining his tactics, the plan, the game plan that he had, everything. And Regragui was one of the guy listening.
All right, let's move on now to let's go into Stuart Robson mode to try to figure out what the World Cup
final. Whoa, I'm so excited.
France against Argentina. Now, let's start with the injury news that we know of. My understanding from the Argentina camp is, obviously, Di Maria was on the bench. He might have been fit to play, but he is as fit as he's going to get, and he is ready to start if he chooses.
Yeah.
And I don't believe there are other, as of we talk now, and bear in mind, it is Thursday night here in Doha, and the game is on Sunday, so we have some days to go. There are no other significant new injury concerns for Argentina, are there?
No, I don't think so. I think Rodrigo De Paul, who was also a bit doubtful before, is completely fit now. Everybody's is ready to go. It's all about recovery. They will hardly train between now and Sunday anyway, whether it's the French or the Argentines. It's just about keeping everybody ready, everybody fit, no like training incident, nothing like that.
So with the French, on the other hand, we have Adrien Rabiot, Upamecano, and Kingsley Coman, all of them getting the flu.
Yeah.
Which apparently they were calling the desert flu or the camel flu, which...
I'm not sure where that is.
No, no, where that comes from.
From the aircon, apparently.
It's the same flu that a lot of people here have had. Is it fair to say, I mean, I'm going to go out, correct me if I'm wrong here. If Rabiot is fit, he starts 100%.
Yeah, and he trained today, so...
There may be a doubt with Upamecano and Konate, because Konate did play...
Played really well. I still think Upamecano is ahead of him in the pecking order for Deschamps, which, as you know, I'm much more of a Konate guy, but it's fine.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? So one-on-one against Messi, on paper, you would assume that would be more... Konate might be more of the one-on-one defender.
I would think so. I mean, Upamecano is slightly quicker, apparently, from the test that they did. So maybe I just think they...
It's not going to be necessarily flat-out speed.
As we saw with Guardiola. Upamecano is back at training as well, and Coman stayed in his room. But they, apparently, from what I was told, there's no worry about Kingsley Coman, and it's a small virus.
So then let me give you my France 11. You correct me if I'm wrong, right?
Yeah.
In goal, the captain, Hugo Lloris, who could become the first captain in history to lift the World Cup twice.
Yeah.
Nobody's managed it because, of course, the other time that you've had teams winning back-to-back, Brazil's captain changed from 58 to 62, I think. Was it Didi in 58?
Yeah.
Again, also before my time. Don't laugh in the back.
And in Italy as well, in 34
and 38. Italy, 34 and 38, also definitely before my time. This is significant.
It's amazing.
He's 31 years old. He's not that old. He can make it three.
I don't think he will, but yeah, you're right. I mean, Wednesday night was a special night for him because he became, on his own, the most capped French player in history, overtaking, well, he was level with Thuram before, and with that game, he was on his own. He will have another cap, of course, on Sunday, and if he was to become the first captain ever to leave the World Cup back-to-back, it would be an incredible achievement for someone who was a bit criticised, not just before the England game, but even before the start of the tournament, and who so far has been almost perfect. I know he dropped a few balls there and there, but that's okay.
There is a part of me that wonders if Deschamps were not the manager and if Magic Mike were around.
Okay, but Deschamps is the manager and Magic Mike is injured. So.
Okay, just throwing it out there.
His time will come. Don't worry.
We love you, Magic Mike. We know you're cheering them on.
His time will come.
Okay, right back, Jules Koundé.
Yeah.
I don't think he's been solid. He's done what he's done to do. They don't want him to attack because the other guy goes forward all the time.
Yeah.
So he hangs out back there and is kind of like a third center back.
Exactly.
No fuss, no muss from him there.
Yeah, exactly.
Center backs, obviously Varane. The other one...
More likely Upamecano.
Yeah. Left back Theo. Yeah. And it's interesting because there was one point during the game when Theo seems to take a lot of bumps, as we say in wrestling parlance. He's on the ground, Camavinga's warming up. You explain to me, Camavinga's coming on to be the backup left back.
That's right.
Theo's fine. Yeah. He's going to play, right?
Yeah, he's fine. He's going to play. He became the third defender to score in a semi-final of the World Cup for France after Thuram in 98, Umtiti in 2018, of course, against Belgium. And now Theo, which I find that stat completely pointless. I'll give you that.
It's pretty pointless.
But fascinating in a way that, like, in semi-finals, we have those defenders scoring. It's great.
In semifinals, as if France played in like 20 semifinals.
Only seven. It's okay.
I laugh at seven.
I think only Germany have more, you know? But anyway. Go on.
Enjoy. No, semifinals says a lot about you. It's okay. I think it's a number of stars. Wait, how many stars do I...
Two, because we only count modern time. Okay. I mean, this one was 06, so there's only one.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. midfield, I thought Tchouaméni had a really, really solid game.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was very important. You'll be glad to know that Fofana is gone, and instead we'll get some Rabiot back,
Rabiot,
you think.
Back,
right?
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Okay, and then with them is Griezmann,
yeah.
Who, for me, arguably, maybe France's player of the tournament.
Completely, I agree with you. Him and
although
Kylian.
Him and Giroud.
And Kylian. Yeah, you have to count Kylian.
And then obviously the front three, Dembele, Giroud, and Kylian.
Yeah.
All right. That's my France lineup.
Yeah.
Mom, give me your Argentina lineup.
Okay. So the France lineup, you're right. I'm telling you right now because everybody's fit. This is what Deschamps would do.
This
so
is what we're going to debate like now.
For Argentina, as we said, I think, in the last show, this is the team that has changed the most tactically and in terms of personnel in the six games so far in this tournament. Scaloni has tried, obviously, especially after the defeat against Saudi Arabia, where someone like Julian Alvarez, for example, didn't start. Changed a lot, changed the formation. We saw a back five, we saw a back four. We saw four central midfielders against Croatia in the semi-final, for example. So there's a lot of things that he can do that he's done before.
This
that
is far
changed.
More interesting than France.
Yeah, France is
here.
Boring, completely.
So let's start with, does he go back three or is it back four?
No, I think he will keep the back four, I think. He only did it against Holland to the Netherlands, to just match their...
Don't apologize for saying Holland instead
but
of
no,
Netherlands.
It's not really Holland. It should be the Netherlands.
Thing. No. Holland's fine. It's the football team's Holland. Hope Holland. They don't say Hope Nederland, do they?
No, that's true. I will have Molina right back instead of Montiel. Even if Montiel is probably stronger defensively, Molina is quicker. And I think against Kylian, you go with Molina. Otamendi, of course.
Obviously.
Yeah, and Kuti Romero. And then a left back.
Acuña is back from suspension. He's got to start.
You think, even if Tagliafico played really well, let's be honest here, we don't like him and he's been rubbish with Lyon, but he played really well.
It's not a personal thing, by
the
way, it's just, if you're watching, we don't like you, it's just that you know, we think you've had a bit of a difficult time at Lyon.
But so basically, after that, there's only one call you make, because Alvarez is going to start, Messi is going to start, Alexis is going to start, and De Paul is going to start. So the last one is either Di Maria if you want to play a bit more attacking, or Paredes if you want to control the game a bit more. What do you think?
See, my thing, and I think this is how it's going to pay out. I don't think.
Sorry, and Enzo starts as well. Sorry.
Enzo. I don't think Scaloni is that defensive minded, but equally, he knows Giroud set piece, Mbappe on the break, Dembele showing up. He doesn't want to get caught. And he knows if he decides in his head that this is going to be a game won by moments, then it's my moments guy. Lionel Messi against your moments guy, Kylian Mbappe, right?
Yeah.
And France throughout this tournament, like I said, I don't think France have played particularly well in the knockouts in this tournament.
No, that's true. Certainly not on long spells.
No.
They've had moments.
It's been about moments,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's been about moments. Mbappe becomes unplayable. Griezmann does something.
Yeah.
Giroud does something.
Yeah,
and then
lifts
his shirt so we can see his abs.
It's a fair assessment.
Which he does all the time, by the
way. Yeah, he loves it. Loves it.
Good for him. If this is the game that I'm expecting, I don't want to take the game to you. So in other words, I don't want to go Di Maria in there.
Yeah.
Because then, yes, I take the game to you, but it means Messi's got less space in which to work. It means that I give you more moments.
Yeah.
Did you see what I'm
saying? Yeah, I agree. And that's why I think he will start exactly, apart from Tagliafico and Acuña, I think he will start with the team that started against Croatia. And then you can always adjust, readjust if you want at halftime after an hour. You can have options from the bench like Papu and Lautaro and Di Maria and all those guys. But I'm convinced now, the more I think about it and I try to think what Scaloni will do to counter this French team that will be so happy, one, to be the underdogs, if that's possible, and two, to just say to Argentina, here you go, have the ball, do those 100,000 passes if you want, it's not a problem for us. We can take it and then we hit you on the counter. And that's certainly the game plan that Deschamps will want to put in place for France.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Now, in terms of matchups on the counter, right, you ruled out the back three. I do wonder if it is a back three, and obviously if there is the threat, the obsession with Mbappe's pace, Otamendi is of a certain age at this stage of his career. I have no concerns about Romero if he's fit.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he can match Messi, but he knows, you know, he can get around. The third one for me, though, is Lisandro Martinez, because obviously he can give you that pace. If you want to try to play around France, then maybe, you know, it gives Molina and Acuña more freedom.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad shout, the back five. I don't think the back five is a bad shout. I just
that would mean that dropping Paredes.
Exactly. I think you lose a bit. You still lose some control in midfield. But maybe that's what they want. I'd be surprised if that's what they do. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, looking at this France midfield, right, it's not like I see three Pogbas in there, right? Maybe at some point you say, you know what? I back Enzo, McAllister and Rodrigo De Paul to hold their own against that three.
Know, maybe.
You know, to not get pushed around.
Yeah, maybe.
To not need an extra Paredes in there, right? And then maybe it's a way of drawing France forward as well.
Maybe, yeah, maybe. Right. I think it's a good shout.
Lots of options for you. We are contractually obligated to speak about superstars. So once again, Jules, we're going to do a little mini thing because I read this in a newspaper this morning. It is Messi is the past, Mbappe is the future, and they're both fighting over the present. Messi doesn't want to leave. Mbappe wants to elbow his way in. I know, it's hype, it's big names, it's the things people recognize, it's whatever.
Yeah,
it's a lot of things I don't like talking about the World Cup, but,
I know, but
this
you
is
have
it.
To.
But
this
we
is
have
it.
To.
Yes, this is it. This is, I think the whole world, I mean, even our friend from Brazil were telling me this morning that even people in Brazil want Messi to win the World
Why?
Cup. Because it's Messi and because this is his last ever World Cup match. And what just
we
imagine.
We don't know for a fact, by the way.
It is. But he said it himself. Sorry, it's not me.
He may change his mind. Remember, he said
he won't. He won't.
Play ever
he won't
again
be there in 4 years. He won't be there.
He was going to stay at Barcelona forever.
He won't be there in 4 years.
Right.
So imagine just the whole story. And you and I will be there. We will be in the stadium. And in a way, as much as I want France to win, of course, and the third star on the shirt, all of that, catching up with Italy.
Maybe imagine seeing. Up. You'll still be behind.
One, yeah, you're but still we're trying to catch up.
Okay.
On our way to catch you up. Imagine seeing Messi lifting
that. Because right now, I think you have two
trophy.
More than Turkmenistan, right? Is that it?
We just have, yeah, more? We yeah. have. You
Turkmenistan's
have.
Only been a country for what, like 30 years?
True. Yeah, you only have four more than them as well, you know.
But
just seeing Messi lifting that trophy in that stadium with all the Argentine fans, I think would be very special. I get that. I understand that. What an incredible end of the fairy tale, end of the story, end of it. Anything you want to call it. Imagine the tears of joy from the whole of Argentina, really, and most of the world as well. By the way, I think Mexico are one country that would root for France. The French, of course. And that's it. So it's a lot of, like, you know, the rest of the world against us.
Okay, but I think Morocco might root for France, too.
Do you think? I think everybody would want Messi to win it. I really do.
Let me ask you this, though, because in this Messi Mbappe thing, I mean, okay, I don't know Lionel Messi. You've spent more time with Mbappe than I have. Does Mbappe think in terms of his place in history? Does he think about comparing himself to Messi and to Cristiano and Pelé and Maradona? Or is this all kind of, you know, no, I just want to play and then I'll see where I am when I'm 30.
No, I think in the back of his head he already has the, like, I want to break every record. He knows that if he wins on Sunday, then obviously he will become at 23 the second youngest after Pelé, of course, to win two World Cups. Don't have to be back to back, but to win two World Cups. He knows that if he scores in that final, his goal ratio is going to go up again. Like, all those kind of things is somewhere in his head. Even if right now he's only focused, he would happy take a 1-0 win for France where he hardly touches the ball, for sure, 100%. But I think that, yeah, there's part of him who wants to be the guy that breaks every record, that wins everything, that becomes the greatest or whatever. And that final is another step towards that. It's another stone in his gut. Like, you know, this is what he's building, really. And when you think that he won't turn 24 until 2 days after the final, imagine what a present that would be for him. Incredible. Second World Cup.
On the other side, obviously, you can't speak of Argentina without speaking of Diego Armando Maradona. Mm. wherever he is.
Yeah.
Obviously, he'll be cheering on Argentina.
Yeah, of course.
I think we share the same view on this. Messi's place in history is guaranteed whether he wins this World Cup or doesn't win this World Cup.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think, I'm just giving you my view on this, I don't think he diminishes Diego one bit. Because that was a different era.
No, yeah, definitely
that
not.
Was a level of stardom, of charisma, which Messi cannot match because he's a different person.
Yeah, completely different personality as well. So if you like the guys like Diego, then Diego will forever be your GOAT. If you look at it in a different way and you incorporate the different personalities that they both have, you look at Leo and Leo has to be the GOAT. There's just no one who will ever be greater than him and has never been greater than him either. If he wins the World Cup or not, but I think he showed enough in this World Cup at 35 years old. Everything, and you can give me, oh, he scored 3 pens out of the 5 goals. Okay, I don't care. For what he's done in this tournament.
It's the assist right by his alone, does it?
Everything that he's done, at his age on a stage like this, shows that he, unlike Diego for other reasons, that he's the greatest of all time.
Well, that's your view. I don't think many will disagree. Wow, I can't wait.
I can't wait.
6 o'clock on Sunday, it's Argentina against France for all the marbles. All right, enough World Cup final. Never thought I'd be saying that, but hey, how about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gabby.
Jules, it's all done.
Well done.
Real Madrid announced the signing of Endrick from Palmeiras, but because he's still just 16, of course, he can actually join until 2024.
That's right.
60 million euros. That is a lot.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of cash for a guy who's 16.
For a 16 who's played with Palmeiras first team, not that much, who's been great when he played. I give you that, but it's still a lot of money. And let's hope that he's another Rodrigo or Vinicius, that it works out and it's money well invested. And I'm sure it will be, because it looks, from what we've seen and what we've read and what we've heard, an incredible generational talent. But he's still only 16 and it's a lot of money. He will move, as you said, in July 2024 when he will become 18. So when he'll be old enough to travel to Europe and to Madrid. And I think the excitement is going to build between, every time he's going to do something with Palmeiras now, you know, everybody in Madrid and everybody around the world is like, oh my word, they signed. So.
Yeah, I think Real Madrid TV will probably be buying the rights to Palmeiras. I want to chuck something out there. This is something I feel very, very strongly about and people don't ordinarily know about. Is if you are a minor, if you're under the age of 18, it is illegal for you to leave one federation and move to another federation, with three exceptions. So you can't change countries if you're under 18, right? One case is if your parents move for non-footballing reasons, which usually, let's face it, often bogus reasons, right?
Yeah,
like dad gets a job as a gardener, like those.
Just like this.
Amazing. Another one is if you happen to live near the border within whatever, I think it's like 50 miles or something like the border. And the third one is if you're inside the European Economic Area, which is a fancy way of saying European Union, because different rules apply to the European Union, because they can basically just go and write their own rules. I don't think that is fair. Whenever you see somebody under the age of 18 moving, now, obviously, this didn't exist when Messi moved, right? It's a more recent.
Yeah, it's more recent.
Messi moved at 13.
Yeah.
But when you see that happening, there's usually one of those things. And it, in many cases, not all of them, there is something slightly dubious going on. People finding passports left and right. And I'm just going to leave it at that.
No, you're right.
The people out there who trafficking kids know who I'm talking about. They know who they are. That's not the case with Endrick.
No.
He's staying where he is.
Sticking with Real Madrid, Gab, you were 100% correct. Cristiano Ronaldo has returned.
Not only is Cristiano Ronaldo back at Real Madrid, he's been embraced by Florentino Perez, who says, this will always be your house. So there. Now, unfortunately, there's nobody else at Valdebebas. He's there by himself, training by himself.
Yeah.
And look, so I'm not saying...
It's his house, but just for him.
It's his own personal space. I think it shows that, hey, maybe Cristiano Ronaldo isn't viewed as the devil at Real Madrid, like some people tell me when they say, I'm crazy, there's no way he would ever go back.
Hang on. If Cristiano said, hey, listen, I'm in Madrid now, this is where I live, he still has his house there.
Okay, he has houses in like 18 different places.
I know, but he might want to be in Madrid. Real Madrid right now, I can't say to him, well, we don't really fancy you coming and training here on your own. every club does that with a former player, whoever you are. So I would think that Cristiano and Real Madrid would be exactly the same.
You don't think he did it so he could come by and hang out with Carlo Ancelotti and say Carletto,
shot.
Can you put in a word with Florin? He still loves me. I don't know.
Nah,
I don't know. We'll
I don't
see.
Think so.
More Madrid. Why would anybody tell us if Karim Benzema is going to fly back for the World Cup final?
As in fly back to watch it?
Fly back to watch it. He's not going to play.
He's not going to play. So fly back to watch it is a good question. I think he would get invited.
Why did Didier Deschamps throw such a hissy fit when he was asked that question?
No, because the question was about him playing, not him coming to watch.
Okay, but just answer the question normally. Just say he's injured.
But it's a stupid question. It's a stupid question. So he goes like, well, I'm not even going to answer that. Let's move on.
I'm sorry, Mr. I'm sorry, Papa Smurf.
It's simple as that. He was asked already before that 10 days ago. He answered.
10 days later.
But what? Nothing has changed. What would he have? What something would have changed? I don't even know who asked the question. I wish I'd been there and I could have like literally destroyed the guy, because what's the point? And what I find even worse, Gabby, is that people still think like, oh yeah, yeah, he could come back and play. No. Really?
Somebody told me that this is a lose-lose for Karim Benzema, in the sense that the people who hate Karim Benzema, if he stays in Madrid, they're going to say, oh, look, he doesn't really feel part of this France team, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
If he comes back, people are going to say, oh, look, he's taking the glory from Griezmann and Mbappe and Giroud.
So in 28,
he can't win.
In 2018, they invited to the final the people who got injured who would have been in the squad, like a Laurent Koscielny, for example.
Right.
So this is something that they've done before that I would think, although they haven't really decided yet, but they will do again.
But he wasn't in the squad in 2018.
No, but what I mean is like right. he's not that won't be seen as him taking the limelight.
Gotcha.
Because we did it before with players who were not, okay, Karim Benzema, but still. So this is kind of a bit of a habit for the French to do that. So it would just be, you know, part of that. So Lucas Hernandez would be there, you know, and Nkunku, maybe Pogba, maybe Conte. Some of them who have clubs is more difficult than ones like Matuidi, for example, who is here now in Doha, who doesn't have a club, has retired, so it's easier for him to come. Then for Conte, who right. is like in kind of a mini preseason with Chelsea, for example, and Pogba recovery, okay. all that kind of stuff.
You'd like to see him there, yeah?
Yeah, okay. I would. Of course I would. I want to see them united. Gab, we've had the initial verdict in the Super League. Remember that case that we mentioned to you many times on the show? And it looks like a win for UEFA, FIFA, and the other football institutions.
Yeah, so you said it right there. Initial verdict. This is a non-binding initial verdict. I'm not a lawyer. As you know, my thoughts on lawyers, but I spent a long time speaking to lawyers on all sides to try to understand what the heck this means. Essentially, this case you've been living under a rock, refers to the right of European clubs, specifically Real Madrid, Barcelona, and Juventus, to create their own competitions, like, say, a Super League to replace the Champions League, which they could run themselves. They have the right to do that, but do they have the right to do that while staying in the FIFA and UEFA ecosystem? In other words, while still playing domestically, while still being part of the transfer system, and so on. UEFA and FIFA say they don't. And those clubs say it's an abuse of a dominant position by punishing them for kind of doing their own things on their own time.
Yeah.
So the way this works is they had their hearing way back in June. And because most lawyers evidently are very lazy and aren't really good at typing or even thinking. Sorry, I you know my things on lawyers. It's taken this long. One lawyer is ready. He's the Advocate General. He gives what he calls an opinion or a direction. It's kind of like a summary of how he sees a case. This has come down very much on the UEFA and FIFA side, coming out and saying, yes, the pyramid is part of the European model of football. Yes, they are allowed to sanction clubs that you know start new competitions without permission, although those sanctions have to be proportionate. Now, the definitive verdict may come in March, may come in April, may come in June, because, hey, lawyers, holidays, Easter, you know how it is.
Yeah.
When that comes, the big question is this judgment from the Advocate General an indication of what's to come?
Usually it is, right?
Well, here's the thing. Everybody's saying 70% of the time, the final verdict follows what he says. In reality, I spoke to somebody who's a little better informed. 65% of the time, in these types of cases, they have followed the Advocate General.
Oh, okay.
25% of the time, they've come to the same conclusion as the Advocate General, but either partially or making different arguments, and 10% of the time they've gone against it. There's 15 judges. It's not going to be a vote. It's not there's no dissenting opinion. It's not the U.S. Supreme Court, 5-4, blah, blah, blah. It's they have to reach some sort of consensus.
Okay.
So that's I think that's why it takes so long.
Yeah.
Because also I think these guys get paid like by the hour. Anyway, so but it is, I think, a strong indication that things may break UEFA as well.
Yeah.
All right. Hopefully, I won't have to talk about lawyers and legal stuff for a long time.
You did really well, though, I have to say.
Eric Ten Hag says that Jadon Sancho is, quote, struggling mentally and physically. Are you surprised, Jules?
So I'm not surprised. I think it's a very sad story, of course. I think.
Why? Is there something we don't know that you're not allowed to tell us and it's come out?
In which way?
With Jadon Sancho.
The fact that he can't. Right now, he's not in the state of mind of playing football, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, no, that's what Ten Hag said, but we kind of knew because we'd heard rumours and the fact that he hasn't been involved with the first team recently. I find it sad because, and I think a lot of people think, oh, but they're footballers, they have the dream life, they earn loads and loads of money, which is true, but they're also allowed to have feelings, to not be in a good mood, to not feeling like playing football. It's not easy, whether you, in that case, think that Jadon Sancho has done everything he could or not, whether you blame him, the club, Ten Hag, whatever the cause and the reason that you have, it's just sad that a footballer right now is not fit mentally and physically to play football and does what his job is, but also what he loves.
I'm 100% in agreement with you, and I also think that, and I'm assuming Eric Ten Hag cleared it with Sancho's people. I think it's good that we talk about this. I think it's good that people come
you're
out.
Right.
It's not shameful. We don't have to make up some story about why he's not playing or not playing well. You know, he's having issues. He's not in the right state of mind. Let's be open about it. It happens to all of us sometimes. And let's move on. And so I think well done, Ten Hag.
Yeah,
and well done, United.
And Ten Hag also said that more money will be available to strengthen Manchester United next summer, and even more than last summer, possibly. Gab, do you trust him to spend it wisely? Because that's, you know, money is good, but it's how do you spend it?
So I praised Ten Hag before. Look, if he's going to go shopping at his old clubs again and in his old league, no, I don't want him spending.
You don't want another Anthony or...
I don't need more. Not Anthony at $100 million.
Yeah.
I don't need that. I don't need Lisandro Martinez or whatever they paid for him. I mean, not that he's been poor, but...
No. I see what you mean.
I need a little more imagination here, right? I don't need him going and spending $150 million on Mohamed Kudus because, you know, he had him last year or whatever, right?
Yeah.
I need the directors of football...
That was my next question.
John Murta.
Yeah,
and
here we
Fletcher
go. Do we trust them?
To be empowered to do their job and to do their job because I want to be able to judge them, judge their work with serenity, right? This is the key thing.
Yeah.
They're there for a job. Manchester United, you've set up a certain way of doing things. Let these people do their job and let's judge them afterwards.
Yeah.
More United. You think United is a pretty popular club.
I know.
Your buddy Avram Glazer
is
here in Doha.
He's here.
This is your question to me. Sorry.
No, because I've just asked you once.
Oh, you're right.
So, yeah.
Sorry, Jules. Your buddy Avram Glazer here in Doha. In fact, you guys were playing paddle earlier just up the street.
Yeah.
He didn't speak to you, but he spoke to The Athletic and explained that the sale of Manchester United isn't necessarily a sale. And he gave you a wonderful quote in The Athletic story.
Yes, that's right. He said, try to make sense of this, okay? It's not, I'm going to read it because Gab wrote it there. It's not necessarily a sale. It's a process, okay? And we're going forward with the process and we'll see what happens. Thank you, Avram, really, for the clarity, it's for sale, maybe not really for sale, depending on who's coming with what kind of money. Based on process and we follow the process. We're not really sure exactly what the process is, but we will get there eventually.
Yeah, I think what he's saying is they instructed the Rain Group, the people who sold Chelsea, to field offers. The offers can be offers for investment as minority investors, for the whole club.
They let the door open for everything, pretty much.
Yeah, that's $7 to $8 billion. If they don't get the valuations they want, they go forward. That's what he's saying. But it is funny with Avram Glazer because, obviously, if you follow the club, you know Joel Glazer. I'm not saying he's more important than Avram, but he is involved daily with the club.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
It's just that Joel Glazer knows how to avoid the media.
Exactly. We never know where he is.
Avram Glazer, he gets like a deer in headlight and he starts saying things that don't have much meaning.
Usually he comes out of his car and then says, there's a camera here. Let's say something. This happened earlier this week, but we didn't really have time to talk about it before. So it's now. And it's time pieced together the row between U.S. Men National Team coach Greg Berhalter and Joe Reyna, arguably his most talented player. Gab?
Yeah, so a bunch of people reported on this, in including our own Jeff Carlisle and The Athletic and other outlets. We now know that Gio Reyna was a marginal player in this World Cup.
Yeah.
And there was even a vote among the other 25 players in the national team about whether he should go home. And by a margin of 13 to 12, they kept him around. Which my first instinct is, wow, they really didn't want him around.
Yeah, big time.
They really, really
he must
want
have
him
been
around.
Very disruptive.
Very surprised by that. Very surprised he went to a vote. We had Greg Berhalter on. You saw his face light lit up when he spoke of Gio Reyna.
Yeah.
There's obviously some serious personal issues coming on here. The way this story came out is problematic. Berhalter was giving a talk, and it was supposed to be an entirely off-the-record talk. He mentioned a player without mentioning what player it was.
Yeah.
Others stood up that it was Gio Reyna that he was talking about. Then obviously couldn't be denied. Gio Reyna hit back at Berhalter a couple days ago. It's ugly.
It's ugly.
And it's unusual. And I go back to this, and I'm assuming we're going to find out more, but I have never heard of a national team, and team being the operative word, putting it to a vote like you're playing freaking Survivor or something.
No, you're right.
And deciding he stays, he goes. It can only make me think that something really serious happened.
Yeah, you're right. On the other hand, I don't think Berhalter should be even in a place where he thought it was safe to talk. It's never safe to talk. He can't be that naive. It can't be that naive. And for him to like...
He was badly let down.
But still, he was a bit naive. But for him to go down that route anyway, when he knew that everybody would know that it was a Gio Reyna that he was talking about, I thought was very clumsy from him. On the other hand, Gio Reyna is 19, right?
Mm-hmm.
So 19, this is your first World Cup, and you're so disruptive that, as you say, Gab, the squad is one vote away from sending you home. Really? Really? So I don't know exactly what happened. I don't know if he knew he was not going to play much, because Joe said in his statement that Coach Berhalter said to him, you're going to have a limited game time in this competition. So maybe he was cross with that. Maybe he make life difficult for everybody else. Maybe he didn't want to train. Maybe he was very disruptive at training. I don't know, kicking the ball on the motorway. Everything. I don't know what he could have done. But like you said, it's huge.
We've covered a lot of World Cups, and normally there's a strong manager inside who says, my way, you know, my way or the highway. For there to be 13 players, again, it has to be something serious.
Yeah, definitely.
Youssoufa Moukoko's contract is winding down, Jules, and he's been linked to Liverpool, United, and Chelsea. But apparently he doesn't want to move somewhere just to sit on the bench.
Yeah, that's right.
So my question is, don't go for one of these clubs, because you will probably sit on the bench at those clubs.
True, and I would...
Maybe stay where you are.
I would expect him to do that.
On the bench. Well...
Well, yeah, he can, I mean,
but he's getting playing time.
He was getting better. He scored a few good goals just before going to the World Cup, where he went with Germany, of course. It would make so much sense, Youssoufa, if you're watching and listening, just stay where you are. This is good for your progression. You're going to work well. Edin Terzic likes you. You like him. It works. Why would you go right now to try to get that big contract?
No, sign a contract. Get one of those
release
very
clauses.
Low release clauses.
Of course.
Right? Because you could tell Dortmund, hey, Dortmund, either I leave, I walk for nothing, or you give me a low release clause. To like Erling Haaland's release clause, for example. Well,
exactly.
Erling Haaland's release clause when he moved to Leipzig, when he moved from Salzburg to Dortmund, 20 million, something like that. You hold all the cards, do that, and develop and grow there. Because honestly, without the love in the world, if you go to Liverpool, you're going to be on the bench.
Yeah.
If you go to United, well, actually, right now, United Chelsea, you may start, but they're going to bring in more experienced strikers than you.
Exactly. FIFA have revealed the amount of money spent on agents and intermediaries, fees, and for the transfer gap, it's around $550 million, which is close to the record level of 2019.
The number's actually a lot higher, Jules, because, of course, these are just the ones involved in international transfers, where you have to, FIFA have this online system called the Transfer Matching System, FIFA TMS, where you have to input who's getting paid for what. And they actually pay it. They control this pretty tightly. So you have to report all the fees and it's cross-checked with accounts. You don't want to defraud them. But it's much more than that because, of course, there's also domestic transfers where people get paid. I have no issue if you want to pay an intermediary a lot of money.
Yeah.
No issue whatsoever. However, I think you have to be able to justify it to your stakeholders, to your fans, to your club official, to the media. Right now, that's not being done. There is no transparency. FIFA have all this information. The clubs will not let them share it. I think FIFA should say, you know what? Screw you.
Yeah.
Here it is, online. Anthony moved from here to here.
Do you think that will happen one day? Because you've asked for that for a long time now.
You know what? I'm going to keep asking for it because I think people deserve to know.
No, I agree. I agree.
Fernando Santos has left his post as coach of Portugal.
Yeah! Finally, we got rid of Tata Martino. We got rid of him. It was good World Cup.
Well, this is what I'm going to say. He's been in charge since 2014. And you and I were often critics. But he did win Euro 2016, which I believe is Portugal's first ever major trophy.
Yeah,
right?
Well done to him, yeah.
Portugal, a third of the way to matching France's major trophies. Unless my number is wrong, my counting is wrong, right? You've got three, right?
Four. Two Euros and two World Cups.
Okay, you got four. Okay.
Yeah.
25% of the way there. Right. And you also won the 2019 Nations League.
Yeah, well done as well. Listen, with all the talent that he's had in those 8 years...
Oh, he should have won some World Cups.
I'm not saying that he should have won some World Cups, but this trophy is there, and well done to him. Let's not go over 2016 again, because that breaks my heart, because they beat France in the final. But they were super defensive from start to finish. I mean, let's remember those group stages, the knockout rounds, and how they scrapped through all of them until the final, pretty much. The Nations League 2019, let's pass. I keep saying what we've been saying for months now, that he's a defensive coach. He did a defensive job in 2016. Well done to him. That worked. It worked out for him and for Cristiano, for Pep, for all the others. Well done to you. I maintain that with those players and those generations, he could have done better outside of that Euro 2016. That was a miracle, let's be honest. And that's all. And that's where I find it sad, because many times we thought, okay, maybe now, maybe they're going to evolve, maybe it's going to change. And in the end, it was never changed. And this is how you lose to Morocco in the quarterfinal of this World Cup.
I think after winning the Euros, it was going to be hard to remove him. And then he won the Nations League. We've said this on the last show. No country produces as many quality coaches per capita as Portugal.
Yeah.
And with the amount of talented potential national team coaches you have, maybe you don't keep a dude for... Eight and a half years.
Gab, we have a referee for the final, and he's one of the possible names that you threw out there.
Yes, and remember my names were Danny McAlee, Anthony Taylor is an outsider, and Simon Marciniak. It's not McAlee, it's not Taylor. It is Simon Marciniak. For those who don't know him, he's a Polish referee, the guy with the big, big biceps. Looks like he spends a ton of time at the gym. Looks like he knows how to take care of himself. I think Danny McAlee would have been an option. I think, though, given the sour relations between Holland and Argentina...
It was wise. It was wise not to pick him.
Marciniak is an experienced referee. I don't know if he's thought as highly as McAlee is, but...
Calm and composed, you know what to expect with him, right?
Yeah, and he's a big dude. He's not going to take any... He knows how to handle
it. He knows exactly.
Utrecht coach Henk Fraser has been sacked, and the reason we're talking about Utrecht is the reason he was sacked.
Yeah, I mean, quite an incredible story, I have to say, Gab. He was part of Van Gaal coaching staff with the national team until the summer, left to take this job as a number one, and 6 months in, he's out because he had an altercation with Amin Younes. Remember the...
Yes, I remember Amin Younes. Yeah. The walking, talking, head case problem child.
True, very talented. But clearly with attitude issues, I think, pretty much everywhere.
I think he's on loan from a team in Saudi at Utrecht now. He's
exactly.
Generally
but he went to
perpetually
like a thousand
unhappy,
clubs.
Major chip on his shoulder, very talented.
Yeah, and Henk Fraser had an altercation with him where basically he grabbed him, literally grabbed him by the neck. And
wait, was it going to be like one of those like choke slams that like sorry. You would have a loved lot of professional
that,
wrestling references.
You
that
would
I
have loved that. Which obviously you can't raise your hands on.
No,
on
a, you can't touch your player.
Exactly. Yeah. Whether it's yours or not yours, whether you know you or not, and clearly this is the right. But I find that incredible. You know, this is a serious team, like a club in the Eredivisie. This is a serious coach as well, and this just blows my mind that things like that happen.
Yeah, no, really. It's.
Pablo Mari is back training in Monza, Gab, 2 months after being stabbed. Remember that, obviously, attack in the mall?
Oh, that's right. A person who was mentally ill in a shopping mall just grabbing a knife and going around stabbing people among them. Tragically, Pablo Mari, who then came back. Obviously, he's there. He's on loan from Arsenal. But he's back in training, and I think we might see him in the pitch probably before the end of January. Yeah. So well done, Pablo.
Yeah, that's great.
It's glad that this had a bit of a happy ending, at least for him. Jules, we have a record amount of Monza in this podcast. Because, in fact, it's the second Monza story in the Quick Hits. This
Why
makes me
it?
Very happy because Monza is a very special place. The Royal Palace, the racetrack where they do the Italian Grand Prix. It's where my parents got married. So
Monza's
a special place in my heart.
Yeah.
So great happens? Football team as well, historically, where Gigi Casiraghi came
through.
Yeah, of
course.
Anyway, their owner these days, of course, is a man named Silvio Berlusconi, who used to own Milan and won a couple Champions League titles with them. Now, he made some promises to the players, and you added this quick hit because you thought...
I just thought this is hilarious. And coming from Berlusconi, who's 83 maybe now?
He's 80 a lot.
Yeah. 80 a lot, who still looks like he was 40. Pretty much, with all the work that has been done on his face, promised the players like a coach full of prostitutes.
Yes.
In case they were obviously
staying. A busload of hookers, as he put it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
now.
Which, like, I know he said a lot of stuff in his life, you know, and this is maybe minor compared to other things that he said. However, I find this unbelievable.
All I'm going to say about this, to be fair to Berlusconi, who said some really inappropriate and tone-deaf things in the past, he's clearly joking, and I think he's making fun of himself in it.
Really?
Because obviously he would hold parties
then don't
at his house
it,
with
then.
Different people.
I know,
and stuff
Bunga
like
Bunga,
that.
But still, Bunga Bunga, don't say it.
Yeah, no, probably not the most appropriate thing to say. I would agree with you there.
And finally, Gab, a shout out to your friend, Gianluca Vialli, who has left his post with the Italian national team.
Yeah, he made it clear he's leaving his post temporarily so he can devote all his energies, physical and mental, to dealing with the fact that he has pancreatic cancer. And he doesn't like calling it a battle against cancer. He has this wonderful expression, which I think he draws a lot of strength from, I certainly do, which is, he said, you don't fight against cancer. Cancer's just like, it's like you're going on a journey and this dude's walking alongside you. And all you got to do is head down, go ahead, and hope that eventually the guy gets sick of walking with you and just kind of goes away.
Disappears,
and leaves
you
alone.
Yeah.
And he said that as soon as he's come through this next stage, he wants to come back to the Italian national team. So, Luca.
Good luck, Luca.
We wish you all the best.
Yeah.
Right, Jules. That brings us to an end.
That's it.
We're going to be back.
One more to go.
One more show from
Doha.
One
more to go.
Sunday night, where we will have a new world champion, Argentina or France.
Or maybe not new.
Or maybe no, maybe the old dual champion again. All right, wait. Who's going to be the real protagonist whose name starts with M? Will it be Messi? Will it be Mbappe? Will it be Marciniak?
Oh, nice. Well, we will find out on Sunday then.
All right, until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.